Heart Sutra is, you can say, a condensed version of Mahayana Buddhism. You know, in Buddhism, there are many branches. You might have heard about it. Mahayana, Theravada, Hinayana. And Mahayana is the one which is most popular in India, although in other regions as well, but in India. And Heart Sutra is the condensed version of Mahayana Buddhism teaching, which says that ultimately all phenomenon, everything is emptiness, it's shunyata. That is the smallest way to describe the Heart Sutra. It's also called Pragya Paramita Hridyam Sutra. Pragya Paramita, that means transcendental wisdom. Wisdom that has come after transcending everything. And that is where the Heart Sutra comes from. In Sanskrit, the sutra is Gate Gate Paragate Parasamgate Bodhi Swaha. What that means is gone, gone, everyone gone. Gone to the other shore, awakened. Now, what does that mean? This means that everyone is already awakened. Okay, what is the purpose of doing this? You are already a Buddha. It is just a wake-up call. There is nothing that needs to be done. It is just a very strong conditioning where you think that you are small, or you don't know anything, or you are ignorant, or a beggar, or a sinner. And it has been preached so long, the conditioning is so strong, the hypnotism is so strong, that you just start thinking that I am this small individual, I am this little person who is so limited. But actually it is not like that. And the whole purpose of Heart Sutra is to make you realize that you are already a Buddha. You are. And, you know, somewhere the thought comes to the mind that maybe if I am already a Buddha, will that just increase my ego? No. In fact, it is the end of the ego. That the ego does not exist in the first place. It is just a made-up. It is just an appearance. We think it is there. It is not there at all. We all know that Hindus say that there are seven chakras, or there are theories, right? We know about the seven chakra theories. And the Sufis say that there are seven valleys. Now in Buddhism, it is said that there are seven temples. And I also want to put a disclaimer over here that I was reading this text by Osho, the Heart Sutra. He's given a very nice explanation of the same. And there he has mentioned these seven temples of Buddhism. Okay, I have not come across this term, seven temples of Buddhism, but we don't need to take it literally. You can just understand that it is a way of explanation. You can even say that these are the seven rungs of the ladder. Whatever. The point of saying is that there are seven steps. And the first step is the physical, okay, which is related to your Mooladhar chakra, we can say that. The second is psychosomatic. Psychosomatic is associated with your Swadhisthan. Then psychological, third, which is your Manipur. Fourth is psycho-spiritual, your Anahat. Fifth is spiritual, which is your Vishuddhi. Sixth is spiritual transcendental, that is your Agya. And seventh is transcendental, which is the Sheheshra. Now, this particular Heart Sutra is coming from the seventh. Okay, it is being told at the seventh step, the final rung. That is where Buddha is, and that is where he is sharing it from. So, this Heart Sutra belongs to the seventh temple, as I said, Pragya Paramita. This is what it is called. We are calling it in a translation. We say it is the Heart Sutra, but it is Pragya Paramita. Pragya Paramita is when all the identifications have been broken through all the rungs. Everything has been dissolved and disidentified. Then what arises is a pure awareness. What arises, the wisdom from the transcendental, which is just a witnessing, nothing else. And that is where this Heart Sutra is. And how does that happen? How do you reach that seventh? And how does this wisdom arise? Very simply, and we say that all the time, when you follow your spiritual path and the Guru with great love, with great involvement, commitment, sincerity, authenticity, and your total being, that is when it happens. That is when this wisdom arises. And all the identifications are broken. Now, what are these identifications? Like even saying that I'm a Hindu, or I'm a Muslim, or I'm a Christian, or I'm an Indian, I'm a Chinese, I belong to this particular caste, or I belong to this particular family, or I live here, or my name is this, or I'm a doctor or engineer. What are all of these? These are all identifications. The moment we are born, there are so many. See, the child is born with a clean slate, but because it is born into a particular family, the moment it is born, so many labels are given to it. The child becomes, there is a religion, there is a caste, there is a country, there is a place, there is a family. The moment it is born, all of these are given to that particular child. And that is where the identifications begin. And then there is a conditioning which goes on. Can we say that we need to do away with that conditioning? No. For the social survival, for the survival of that child, all that conditioning, all those identifications are very important. But what happens is they have a purpose to serve. And after a particular point, the same things which were protecting you, the same things which were important for your survival, they also become the biggest obstacle for you. Okay. And so we have taken them up, but we have not learned to drop them when the right time comes. And dropping them does not mean an external dropping, that I leave the family and I say, oh, I will not be an Indian anymore. So I will, you know, do away with my citizenship and I will do away with my Indian passport, or I will go and say that I'm not going to visit the temple anymore because I'm not a Hindu anymore. No. Not these things. It is something very internal. It is about internally understanding that all these are only labels, all these are only very useful names which help me in the survival. What is the survival? That there is a body and there is a mind, and this body and mind need, they have certain needs which need to be fulfilled and which do get fulfilled with all these labels very easily. So that is all. And that happens up till until the fourth temple. If we go back to the temple or even to the chakras, so that is there until the anahat. But most of the people are caught up till the third temple or the third rung, in the first three rungs. That is where most people are. And then naturally, as a part of the evolution, as a process of the evolution, what is going to happen is that if you stay on those three rungs, suffering is going to happen. It is bound to come. There is nobody can get away from it completely. So most people, once that suffering comes and once you start seeing the futility of pursuing worldly things or pursuing the survival process, that is when the desire or the curiosity comes. Okay, what else is there? Okay. And then you start taking on a spiritual path. You look for spiritual answers. You have so many questions that don't get answered by the world. And the journey, the spiritual journey starts. Okay. So what does this Heart Sutra is telling us? When all the identifications are dropped. So first there are worldly identifications. Then when you are on a spiritual path, there are spiritual identifications that also happen. But Buddha is talking about the final. That is when all identifications, even the spiritual identifications, like I may say, oh, I'm a Kriya Yogi, or I'm a Gyan Margi, or I'm the follower of Kundalini, or I do Vipassana. Even these are identifications. all of these are also identifications and they also need to be dropped. Then everything gets dropped. And that is where the Heart Sutra comes from. That is where the wisdom arises. As we spoke about the seven temples, right? And the seven steps. So one of the very important, the most important questions is, who am I on a spiritual path? And very beautifully here, it has been given that at every rung, at every temple, the answer of who am I is going to be different. Like when you are at the Mooladhar, when you are at the physical temple, and you are going to ask this question, who am I? And that's a process which is advised. You need to do that. And the answer that is going to come is that I am this body. And many of us, in fact, I would say majority of us are there at that rung where the identification with the body is very strong. I just cannot even think that I can be something else other than the body. So when you ask this question, who am I? The answer that comes is, I am the body. Slowly moving on at the second temple, when you ask this question, who am I? And the answer comes, I am sexuality. At the Swadhisthan, it is the sexuality that just takes over. And there is a lot of focus on the sexual activity. As you move up to Manipur, or the third temple, the answer to who am I that comes is, I am the ego. I am on a power trip. I need power. And most people who are running after power, who are running after fulfillment of their ego or expanding their ego, they are at the Manipur chakra, or they are in the third temple. At the fourth temple, the answer to who am I is that I am love. That is where the beginning of love. Love, which is, and it is psycho-spiritual. So there is love, which is related to the lower three chakras, which is conditional. And at the same time, there are some sparks of unconditional love also, which start coming in. So it is a mix of that. And that is how it moves on. Fifth chakra, Vishuddhi, it is, I am spiritual. And at Agya chakra, which is your sixth chakra or the sixth temple, that is where the answer comes, I am. And finally, Buddha says you have to keep going. And then when you ask this question, who am I, finally at the Sahasrara, and there is utter silence. There is no answer that comes. That is the silence. And here, what are you? Here you are emptiness. Here you are nothing. And in this nothingness, in this emptiness, which Buddha has called Shunyata, all the fear disappears. That is where the fearlessness comes in. That is where, in a way, you experience death like anything. It is. And a death which does not make you fearful. And you realize that death is nothing but just a change. And the moment you get over the fear of death, all other fears also go away. Now there is no security which is needed. Nothing is needed. Why? Because you realize that there is nothing. That is where. This is the final. This is the highest rung of the ladder. Heart Sutra. This was what was given to Sariputra. So Buddha in his lifetime, of course, had many disciples, but he had 80 chief disciples, and Sariputra was one of them. In fact, when Sariputra came to Buddha, he was a great scholar. And in those times, there was this tradition that if there was a great scholar meant that someone who has understood a lot, someone who knows all the Vedas and the scriptures and the Upanishads and has studied a lot. Tradition was that you would go and you will find who are other scholars and you will have a discussion or debate with them. And whoever will win that particular debate will be considered as the biggest scholar. Sariputra, when he came to Buddha, he already had 5,000 disciples. So with his 5,000 disciples, he went to Buddha to defeat him. And when Buddha met him, he just laughed. And he said, Sariputra, you have accumulated a lot of knowledge. You are a great scholar. And not only in this life, but you have been a great scholar in many lives. Okay? And you have come here to defeat me. But where you are and where I am, we are at different understanding. So I have a condition. And my condition is that for 1 year, you are going to sit in silence with me. And after 1 year, I will be very happy to be defeated by you. Now, while Sariputra was a great scholar, he was really a very, very learned man. But he still was open. He had an understanding. Without defeating Buddha, he could not really be the biggest. So he thought, why not? Right? Since I have come all the way, no problem. I am going to stay here. And he also thought that now that, you know, I will stay here, and because I'm going to stay here, let me be open to Buddha. See, he did not close himself. He said, fine. Now that I have decided 1 year, what's the problem? Let me spend 1 year doing what Buddha is asking me to do. And he just sat in silence for 1 year. After 1 year, Buddha told him and asked him. He says, now I am ready to be defeated by you. And you can imagine what would have happened. Sariputra just got up and he touched Buddha's feet. And he said, I am already defeated. Thank you very much. And please accept me as your disciple. And please initiate me. And also the 5,000 disciples that Sariputra had also became Buddha's disciples. And that is when, although Sariputra had got it, that is when the sermon that Buddha gave to Sariputra is what the Heart Sutra is. Now, this Heart Sutra actually has two versions, a long version and a short version. And I'm not taking the whole of it. I'm just taking a couple of parts of it. And that is enough, because even taking one line from this sutra is enough to tell you about the whole of it. And I just find it so, so beautiful. So let me just read it. Hear, O Sariputra, form is emptiness. And the very emptiness is form. Emptiness does not differ from form. Form does not differ from emptiness. Whatever is form, that is emptiness. Whatever is emptiness, that is form. So you see, it can be completely contradictory and paradoxical to a normal mind, to a normal person. How is that possible? How can form be emptiness? But that is where, you know. So the first word when Buddha is saying, here, what does here mean? Here means at the seventh temple, at the seventh rung, at the last rung of the ladder. There, from there he's saying. Sometimes we say, the top floor. From the top floor, how does it look like? So he's saying that form is emptiness. And let's try to understand this. How is form emptiness? And I will share with you a couple of examples. Again, these are only analogies. These are only metaphors. I'm just sharing with you to give you some glimpse of it. Like, we know that there is ice, which is a form. And there is steam, which is, you can say, emptiness, right? Steam cannot be seen, but the ice can be seen. But what are they? Are they different from each other? No, they are not. They are one. So there are different forms that we are seeing. And the same steam, when condensed, that becomes ice. But actually, they are not different. They are only one. What is meant over here? At the seventh rung, there is no difference between anything. There is, what is this emptiness about? It is about that everything is just one. There is no difference. Whatever you are seeing, whatever forms that you are seeing, their essential element, what we say the essence of everything, is the same. And what is that essence? The essence is emptiness. Where unmanifest is the manifest and manifest is the unmanifest. All that we see, all that we understand of this world, we are seeing so many different things, so many different objects, so many different people. All forms actually, essentially, are emptiness. And in that emptiness, there is all the possibility of form. So the emptiness does not mean that nothing is there. See, nothing means no thing, but the whole manifestation is possible over there. Everything is there. So form is emptiness. You can also look at it from this point of view, that if your mind is thoughtless, let's say you are just quiet for even 10 seconds and there are no words. But does that mean that there cannot be any words? All the words can be there. Everything is possible. You can say everything. Just because you are quiet does not mean that there are no words. There is a potential of all the words over there. Or even when we talk about the silence. So you can look at words are silence and silence are words. The words are only possible when there is silence. Now that even you are listening to me and you are listening to the words that I'm speaking, in the background of it, there is silence. Because without the silence, these words do not make any sense at all. And in between the words also, there are periods of silence. Because if we remove all the silence, the words will not make any sense. And where are these words coming from? These words are arising out of that silence. And the moment I become quiet, where do they go to? They go back to the silence. So silence is the real thing. From there, everything is arising and everything is going back. To the emptiness, the forms are arising and they are going back. So emptiness is the possibility of form. Silence is the possibility of words. This is what that needs to be just maybe remembered, just maybe understood if one can. But main thing is that all of it is one. There is no difference. The polar opposites here are one. Like, you know, when you see a river, in a river, what you see, the water flowing and there are two banks, right? There would be a left bank of the river and there is a right bank of the river. But deep down, those two banks meet, and that is the oneness. They are not two. That is one river only, while they seem that there are two banks. So the form and the emptiness are also one. Another way to understand is man and woman, right? We see two different genders, man and a woman. But actually, man is woman and woman is man. Now, everything here is being said from the seventh rung. Please remember that. We are talking about the Heart Sutra here. And how is man a woman and woman is man? Actually, even science agrees to that now. Because in every man, there is a woman. And in every woman, there is a man. The man is just more masculine, so that's why we say he's a man, and a woman is more feminine, and that's why we say she's a woman. And look at it, even each one of us has come from our parents, both the parents, that means a man and a woman, right? That is where it's a combination of both. Whether you are a man or a woman, you are a combination which is coming from both, so you have elements of both. So deep down, the man and the woman are also one. And even in deep orgasm, there is no, you are not a gender anymore. And that is where it happens. So again, that is leading to that emptiness. And there are no differences over there. So, you know, one of the questions that comes to the mind is that if all is one, then why are there so many differences? Why, you know, we are seeing so many different things? Well, because the creation is not possible without division. You see, creation is only possible through division. Creation needs polarity. Creation needs opposites. And it is the symphony of opposites. See, if you want to make a painting on a white canvas and all you have is a white paint, what painting are you going to create? Is it possible? It is not possible. What you need is at least two are required for creation, at least two. So if there is a white, then you need a dark color because that is what it is going to show up. So similarly, to have this creation, the whole creation is very intelligent. It knows that the differences need to be created. But because of these differences, we get so much conditioned into the differences only. And we have forgotten that beyond all these differences, all of it is one. And that is what that causes us suffering, that we need to understand that. So when Buddha says, "Hear, O Sariputra," that "hear" is very, very significant. You know, we may just think, okay, "hear" we can discard. Okay, let us look at the sutra. But here, even this word "hear" is so important, because "hear" means at this rung. When you look at it from this point, from this temple, from this chakra, whatever you may like to call it, the words are immaterial. That is where. From the seventh temple, form is emptiness. Man is a woman. Woman is a man. Life is death. Death is life. Light is darkness. Darkness is light. Sinner is a saint. Saint is a sinner. Pure is impure. Impure is pure. Perfection is imperfection. Imperfection is perfection. And so on. Actually, opposites are not opposites anymore. The duality is only seen on the surface. Only on the surface there is duality. And it is just the thought, it is the mind which is creating the differences. But in silence, there is no thought and no differences and no opposites. And thus, form is emptiness. Actually, this much is quite enough for the Heart Sutra, but I'm going to share with you a little more. And this is, you know, as part of the sutra, I've taken another because I wanted to share. And here he says, "Therefore, O Sariputra, there is no suffering, no origination, no stopping, and no path." Now, as I said earlier, what did he mean by "here"? Right? "Here" meant from the seventh rung. And now he says "therefore." So see, generally when we use "therefore," that means there is an argument going on. Right? In an argument, you say "therefore." Here his "therefore" means now that you have awakened, now that you can understand, I can share this with you. Now I can say something to you that was not possible before. And what is it? There is no suffering. And this is the ultimate revolutionary statement, even in Buddhism, that how can Buddha say there is no suffering? Why Buddha cannot say there is no suffering? Because mostly what is popular in Buddhism are the Four Noble Truths. We've all heard about them. And the Four Noble Truths, the first noble truth is there is suffering. Almost everybody quotes that, Buddha. That Buddha said there is suffering. This is the first noble truth. And the second noble truth is desire is the cause of all suffering. Desire is the cause of all suffering. And the third noble truth is desiring can be stopped. And the fourth is that there is an eightfold path which will have the right vision, right speech, right behavior. You know, there are those eight things that Buddha has given that leads to the stopping of the desire. So this is what is commonly acceptable and commonly majorly popular in Buddhism, the Four Noble Truths and the Eight Noble Paths. And these Four Noble Truths, the most important is that there is suffering. And here to Sariputra, Buddha says completely contradictory thing. What is he saying? There is no suffering. And that's why this word "therefore" is important. Because Buddha is telling Suriputra, now that you have awakened, it was not possible to tell you this before. But now that you have awakened, now that you can understand, let me tell you, there is no suffering. There is no origination. There is no origination of suffering also. Earlier, what is he saying? That suffering comes from desire. But he's saying here that there is no origination of suffering only. Then in the third noble truth, he says, this suffering can be stopped. And here, what is he saying? There is no stopping. And in the fourth noble truth, what did he say? That there is an eightfold path to the end of this suffering. And here he's saying, there is no path. This is the beauty of the Heart Sutra. It starts with, the Buddha's teaching starts with the four noble truths. And they end with this Heart Sutra, or Pragya Parimita Sutra, which is given to Sariputra, which is completely opposite. There is no suffering, no origination, no stopping, no path. Why this contradiction? Why it is? So the first one, the four noble truths, they are told to those who do not know, who do not know that they are not. Now this itself is a big statement. Who do not know that they are not, who still think that they are, who are still identified. So those four noble truths are for them. But for Sariputra, he has done the entire journey. He has come on the seventh rung. And to Sariputra, Buddha can say that there is no suffering. All of it is nothing but a dream. You can relate it to a dream. Let's say you are dreaming and you are suffering in the dream, and Buddha enters into your dream. So the Buddha can enter and the Buddha can tell you that, you know what, why are you really worried? You are only sleeping on your bed. Now, if you will start looking for that bed in the dream, you will not find it because it is not in the dream. But what is going to happen? You have to listen to Buddha. So the Buddha will tell you that, okay, there is a path I'm going to tell you. You do these exercises, you do these processes, you do these meditations, and then you will find that bed. And once you start doing all of those things, what is going to happen? You are going to wake up. And when you wake up from the dream, then Buddha can tell you, oh, there was nothing. You see, the suffering was in the dream. So all the processes, all the practices, whatever, all the spiritual path, what is it for? It is for you to awaken you. It is for you that you wake up. It's just a wake-up call. And once you wake up, then the understanding is that there was nothing. It was just a dream. Nothing more than that. There is no suffering. So what is the takeaway from this entire session? Nothingness. Emptiness. There is nothing. That is the biggest takeaway from this session. And when we say nothingness, don't look for the meaning in the dictionary, because the dictionary is not going to give you the meaning. The dictionary was not written by Buddha. The dictionary was written by somebody else, and they have defined nothingness in a very different way. And nothingness does not mean that nothing is here. And it means it cannot be defined. And another way of looking at that nothingness is that everything is here, all is here. When there is nothingness, then all is there. And when you act out of nothingness, when you do things out of nothingness, you respond. It is the most authentic, spontaneous, and innocent response when you operate out of nothingness. And in this nothingness, no karma gets created. So Buddha, after his realization, was alive for 42 years. His body was there for 42 years. And he was doing everything. But no karma got created. How? Because he was operating from that nothingness. So nothingness is the final takeaway.